I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's so.
Another episode of Comic Pop Library. This is actually going to be a mini pop in two parts. We are in Topeka with the Kansas Library Conference. Then we are joined periodically throughout the next 2 hours with different people giving us some explanations of programs that they actually have within their libraries or for the state. And between different people coming in will be just generalized discussion. Whatever just pops into our head. So for everybody that's joining us, we do appreciate everybody. We want to thank G&G Auto Sales in Dodge City for providing the vehicle to bring our podcasting equipment to us.
Shout out.
So you can go to buyggandgautos.com, see what they have available on their lots by clicking on the inventory tab. And if you see something you like, you might want to drive on down and see if there's any deals that they can
then
work for you.
Buy it.
Go, Kyle! All
right. With us real quick, we're going to jump in with Jenny Daly. She's from the Lawrence Public Library. She took over the part of their programs dealing with the banned book cards. We did a mini pop on that and a visit last year for the banned book cards. So, Jenny, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And basically, this year's event, we know it's already been done. Would you like to explain, did you have more people this year, and kind of give a general idea of what the program's about?
Right. So last year, we started what we call the Banned Book Trading Cards, and really it was in celebration of Banned Books Week. So we started last year, got a lot of traction, and then we continued it this year. So what we did was a few months before Banned Books Week, we put out a call to artists in the community of Lawrence. And we asked them to submit their original artwork for any banned or challenged book. And last year we had, I believe, about 40 entries. And then this year we ended up having 100. So,
very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then once we got all the entries in, we had a panel of judges pick 7 of those to be the winners. And those 7 were turned into trading cards. So.
And this is the second series.
Yes, it's the second series.
Are they still available for public to buy like last year's were?
Yeah, absolutely. So during Banned Books Week, we gave out one each day, one card per day. And so in order to collect the full set, people who live in Lawrence could stop by the library every single day, pick up that card's day, and then collect all 7. But if people miss out on that or maybe they live somewhere else, they're available for purchase on our website. And you can also buy them in the library.
And what's your website address?
It is lawrencepubliclibrary.org.
Okay. Did you have a comment?
No, I was about to ask what the website was.
And we visited and we saw them last year. This is growing more and more in popularity. I think Susan last year, we visited with her, and she said even globally people were asking for the cards.
Yeah, we ended up selling we sold packs to people in every single state in the United States, and then we sold them to several different countries, including Australia and Finland and Germany and everywhere in between.
How many cards are in the collection?
There are 7 cards.
Are you going to expand the collection at all?
I don't think so, just because, again, it's in honor of Banned Books Week. So it's 7 cards, 1 for each day of Banned Books Week. It was really difficult coming up with only 7 winners. We put all 100 entries on our website, and they ranged from, you know, a 4-year-old submitted one to professional artists that live in the community. And so we had a wide range of artists who submitted them and also just a wide range of artwork and the media that they used.
Is there going to be another series?
Yes, there will be. We're hoping to continue this next year. So on our website, you can buy 2012 cards, or you can buy the 2013 set, and then going forward, hopefully we'll have...
Continue on.
14, 15, etc.
Cool. With the growing interest, is there a possibility to expand the area for artists to get involved? I know you said you already swamped already. Yeah. Definitely jumped, almost tripled from last year. But
yeah. That's something we talked about. But I think the whole point of the project was to really bring out the talents of people in the Lawrence community. And so we kind of want to limit it to just our surrounding community. And we did open it to people in Douglas County, but I don't think that we would ever expand beyond that, not because there's not more talent out there, but we just really want to focus on the local talent.
Okay. On the cards that won, can you just mention the titles? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
If you know the artists as well, you can give that too, but just to give an idea of
the titles. This is a little quiz for me here.
Yes. Didn't know that when you came in today.
I think I have this down. The first one... Our Sunday winner was by Mary Burchell, and it was over the book Bless Me Ultima. And she actually did a fabric quilting, so that was a really unique entry because most people just used paper. Our second day's winner did Leaves of Grass, and that was by artist Nick Ward. On Tuesday, we had... Tuesday was over the absolutely true diary of a part-time Indian, which is the author of that book is Sherman Alexie, and I'm actually reading that book right now and would highly recommend it to anybody. But that artist was Leah Holshore. That is her name.
There we go.
Holshore. She was very talented. And then on Wednesday we had The Perks of Being a Wallflower. And that was by artist Chloe Syme. Then we had, Thursday was really cool. We had I believe he was an eighth grade artist, that he submitted artwork for Charlotte's Web. And his name was Blake Nations. He went to a local middle school in Lawrence. Are we on Friday now?
Yes.
Okay, Friday was I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. And that artist was Bobby Francis McDonald. And then the final day was The Catcher in the Rye, and I believe a KU illustrator professor did that one, and his name is Barry Fitzgerald.
So you had a wide range.
You remembered all of them.
Yes,
without notes.
Right. Very good.
Thank you.
And that is true. So there's no notes involved.
Nope. All talents up in my head.
And with this event, I know the event itself generates a recognition for banned books, but did it create a good discussion within the community like it did last year and keep it into the focus?
Yeah, I think so. Even people who didn't participate in it were, just really excited that the library in Lawrence kind of reflects the priorities of the community. And I think they saw that through this recognition of local artists and culture, and just combining literature with these local talents. So I think a lot of people were excited about it. A lot of people came and picked up their cards. They're still purchasing those cards. So it did definitely create a buzz.
And how much are those cards? Do you know?
Yeah, they're $7 for the full set. And then if you want them shipped anywhere in the U.S., we'll send them to you for $2.95.
Okay. All
right.
So we're looking at
$9.95.
$10. Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Not dropping everything. With the books, did you get any surprise looks from people with some of the entries that, that's really banned? Or
yeah, I think we had several entries from middle school, like I mentioned, and one of the winners was chosen from that group. But several of the students did Charlotte's Web and Where's Waldo? And Charlotte's Web was actually banned, or it was at least challenged in the state of Kansas because a parents group felt that giving animals the opportunity to speak was disrespectful to God because he only gave that power to humans. So I think a lot of people were surprised by that since it is such a famous children's book.
Right.
And then Where's Waldo was banned because I believe in one of the pages there is a female on a beach whose top is off, and she's covering her chest with her hands. But just that one individual image, has created a lot of controversy.
Kids probably wouldn't even be able to find that.
Exactly.
Or they maybe would be able to say, look.
Well, maybe they were, but yeah.
It's also interesting to look at a lot of the books that are banned. The reasoning is, you know, either there was a misunderstanding with some of the content of the book, or one of them was even banned because someone thought that the author's name was similar to a famous communist. So they thought it was written by that communist, but it was someone else completely different. They just had the same name. Okay. So there's just a lot of confusion. The Diary of a Part-Time Indian, that was banned because of a reference to masturbation, which is listed on one single page in, you know, a 250-page book. Right. So you can really stir up a lot of controversy through one sentence if you are an author.
True. And with the banned books coming in, was there anything with graphic novels or movies? Do you talk about that stuff too, or do you just pretty much concentrate with the novels?
We mainly just concentrate on the novels. That might be something that we expand to later. Our staff has actually done a review about a controversial documentary, so maybe we'll pull in some other forms of, you know, art and culture and not just stick to banned books. But I think we just wanted to focus on banned books because, you know, we want to advocate for intellectual freedom and the freedom to read.
Right. Okay.
I always thought it was kind of interesting how through the eras you can tell, you know, something that was banned in the 40s or something wouldn't even be blinked at.
Yeah, exactly.
Nowadays, and it's like...
And the reasonings for those bannings, you know, I mean, in the 50s, again, I think that's around the time that Charlotte's Web was banned. But it's also interesting to look at, you know, there are a lot of groups that are still extremely conservative. And so those same topics frustrate people today. But maybe we just don't hear about it as much because society has changed.
Yeah.
All right. Rita, you can ask questions too if you want, since you joined us.
So who did join us?
This is Rita Seaver. I'm going to have you do it. Actually, it's for the Education Fund, but you're going to have to do the actual name for me.
Okay. We're the Kansas Library Association Educational Foundation, which is a big long mess for KLAEF. That's how we say it. And what we do is we promote the members of Kansas Library Association and raise money to fund grants, scholarships, and provide speakers for the conferences.
Okay. And you do the baskets here at conference as well to generate money. And I don't know if, Jenny, have you been down in the vendors area yet?
I have. I passed through it this morning.
I've put 15 in one.
Is that that place?
It's the big round area. You haven't been there yet.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
April slept in this morning.
I did. And it was nice.
She would have came to breakfast with us.
But
I had Pop-Tarts.
There we go.
My Pop-Tart.
But you do it just primarily for Emporia State, or pretty much where any librarian in Kansas goes to school at? Or
it's any master's degree program. So there's one scholarship that we do right now, and it is juried, and it's an essay competition, and they should be able to get the information pretty soon. I would say within the next 2 to 3 weeks we'll have the information out and hopefully pick a winner so they'll have the money for springtime. But just as a plug, in years past we were able to fund 3 scholarships. Well, you know,
it's hard money, hard to choose.
Money is tight these days, so we are very careful with our investments and our money that we have coming in. So we can only spend a certain amount of our proceeds, kind of like you only can spend the interest.
Right.
And so we also give 4 $250 continuing ed grants per year. And that's for any conference. And this year that money is now gone.
Goes fast.
And yes. And then we have 10 $100 mini scholarships or mini grants, excuse me, that we give for the conference.
Okay.
And we gave those. They aren't They don't have their money yet, though.
Well, I know I'm a transplant, but I know there was a Kansas that was coming down to Oklahoma for her master's. That's why I was curious if it worked for different schools or not.
Right. And
I think you said you were a transplant too, Jenny, or are you from Kansas?
No, I am actually from South Central Kansas.
Okay.
However, I did not go to library school. So there's a fun fact for you.
I didn't either.
Well, there's a chance for you to try for those if you decide to go. So
I may have to take you up on that. I just graduated from KU, though, with my undergrad, so I may have to wait a little bit before I'm ready to go back to school.
Especially with KU.
Exactly.
Good idea.
You mentioned the forms coming out and everything. And do the schools, we've been talking with Jenny about the Banned Book Week and their event that they have it with the Educational Foundation. If a student wanted to do a program of some type, maybe not necessarily banned books, but working on a doctorate or something like that, do you go past the master's level, or you just pretty much, if somebody comes up with an interesting project, would the Education Fund possibly look at that, or is it strictly for students?
The scholarship we have is strictly for students and strictly for the Masters of Library and Information Science, and that actually came up because we have people who are doing, like, curriculum development degrees, mainly in the academic realm, and they were wanting to know if they could try for that, and also the doctorate level. And we are not set up for that right now, but I know in the past, you know, we did include people who are working on their doctorates. I think now we think that's kind of a different level, so we don't want them competing against each other.
Okay. And going back to you, Jenny, with the funding, I know last year you got quite a bit of funding from local. Do you look at other grants around the state and nationally too to help with the project that you do with the Banned Book Week event?
Yeah, we have a foundation director who applies for a lot of grants, both locally, statewide, and nationally. And so she's a great resource for us to get some more funding for our programs. I think our library is very blessed, though, in the sense that we have both a friends group that raises money for us and also a foundation that's dedicated to financially supporting the library. So we are definitely very grateful for all of those sources.
Okay. And I kind of mentioned the baskets. Do you want to explain the wide variety of baskets you get that helps your fund grow and that the librarians that come to conference can help future librarians?
We have 35 baskets that have been donated from all different groups, libraries, individuals. And by groups, what I mean are the different groups within the Kansas Library Association. So there are, say, for example, the Killer Group. Isn't that a great name? But anyway, that's the Interlibrary Loan Group.
Okay.
And so they've gotten together and put together a basket. I'm in the two-year college group, and we just decide on a theme, and everybody brings stuff, and it comes together here at the conference, and we put it together. And those baskets are all on display. And
you accept
so
donations.
That's
for
absolutely
in exchange
for an opportunity to see if you might take a basket home. And the people, the attendees love it. We've had a massive amount of people come out. And yesterday I felt like it was Walmart at Christmas because there were so many people wanting to buy tickets and looking home. And they're just beautiful. We have one that's like kitchenware, two baskets that were for dogs. Some have books in them, some don't. A lot have chocolate in them, and that seems to be a big seller. So that's just kind of an example of what we have.
And not just organizations, but even individuals could bring a basket if
absolutely
they wanted to.
We'll accept a basket from anybody.
I think I've seen more bids for the baskets that have chocolate in them than the ones that didn't.
Absolutely.
Well, Christmas is around the corner. It gets lonely.
Oh, man.
That's a reach.
or the ones with the wine. And I think there was one that had some wine in it, I believe.
Oh, yeah. My husband went buying wine, so we put wine in our basket.
What type of fundraisers do you have with, and you said you do grants and stuff, but within your library, do you have specific fundraisers?
Yeah, we did one for the banned books, trading cards. What we did was we basically auctioned off all the artwork that the artists said that they would donate. Okay. And that was kind of our reveal party as well. That was our first stab at a fundraiser attached to the trading cards. But a fundraiser we do every single year is our caddy sacks, which is where we actually have local businesses will build and set up a themed mini golf hole. And then we set those golf holes up throughout the stacks of the library. And then people can come in throughout the weekend and play golf there. And so they pay a couple bucks in order to play a round of golf within the stacks of the library. So it's a really neat thing, and the community's gotten excited about it. This year, we actually have to go on hiatus because we're in a temporary location since our building is being renovated. So we won't have the opportunity to do it this year. But when we get back into our new place, it'll be bigger and better. So we're really excited.
And you said you auctioned off the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just the winning artwork, or is that every piece of artwork?
It was all of the artwork. So we did the silent auction before we revealed the winners. And then after we revealed the winners, we opened the bids back up only for the 7 winners. So, you know, if people were interested in buying a 2013 winner, they had the opportunity to go and you know, up the bids a little bit. So.
Okay. Any other questions, April?
No. Well, no.
Nope. Just generally, anything in general you want to discuss about what's going on with the organization, or Jenny, what's going on within your library as well? You're more than welcome to. This is your time.
Well, you mentioned that. Sorry. Lawrence is doing renovation to the building. What exactly are they doing?
Well, we were in our library building. We had originally built, I believe, in the 70s, and it just was time for an upgrade. And so the city committed to funding a renovation of our library, and we also raised private funds as well. And then what we did was we decided to – it was a decision of if we should stay in the library and have the construction go on around us, or if we should move out – you know, switch locations and let them do all their dirty work without us. And so we decided to move. Thankfully, there was a Borders that had gone out of business 2 blocks from our location. So we moved into the Borders.
They took out the Borders to get their building.
We now have signs that call it free Borders. So, you know, you can come to Borders, but get books for free, which I think
people are already in the habit of going there to get books. Going there to get books.
Exactly.
So are you doing a full renovation?
Yeah. They're taking the same, it's kind of the bones of the building are staying there. So the foundation and some of the structural components are there, but they ripped everything out, and we are also expanding. So it'll still be, again, the same bones, which I think gives it some character, some history. And it also actually helps. We're going to apply for a LEED certification, which is basically deeming the building environmentally friendly. And there are certain steps that you take to, you know, you make decisions based off of that LEED certification. And so, again, it just reflects the priorities of the Lawrence community, I think.
It'll definitely take a while.
Yeah, we're hoping to open up next summer.
Get used to that Borders.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. It's a lot smaller than our old building. And so I think for staff it's been difficult, but people love it. It's just cozy. It's like they come home to Borders.
If they accidentally pay you for a book, well.
I guess that's all right.
Consider it a donation.
Exactly.
I wouldn't say anything.
I would take it.
Definitely.
I was going to say, we're going to have to get some renovations on us. We're well past the 70s. I'm from the 60s. I know you're from the 70s. We have to get some structural work. anything happening within KLA? Well, you work actually in Wichita with one of the institutions, but
yeah,
I can't remember which.
I know Wichita.
You're down
Area
south.
Tech College, yes.
Okay.
But let me tell you just really quick about the Educational Foundation. Is we are doing a fundraiser And I don't know that anybody's seen it. It's on the web. It's on the KLA webpage. And it's under foundation. And we took the flame of knowledge that is on top of the Library of Congress. I found that picture by accident. So lighting became our motto. So if you give $50 or less, you're a spark. And then it goes up the level beacon, and I can't even remember what the other ones were. And then if you give $1,000 or more, it's light the way. I don't know that we've had anybody lighting the way, but our basket for the baskets here at conference is a lighting basket.
Okay, so cool.
Anyway, that's it.
And you're kind of in a different world than the public libraries, but with the banned books, do you really get involved with that with your students, or are you kind of isolated from that a little bit?
Actually, we're pretty involved in everything that's library related, but this year I didn't have a lot of time. We just put up a billboard kind of on the outside of our library, and it said these books are challenged. So I've had some really good discussions with faculty and students about what challenged means, what banning a book means. And so we do, and right now we're in the midst of the Big Read Wichita, and that's we're doing True Grit. And so next week we're having a chili feed for everybody at the school. And it's free chili, so I imagine it'll go really fast.
That could go wrong.
Yeah, I'm thinking Blazing Saddles wrong.
I don't have to see them after lunch, so I don't care. And we've got a 6-foot cardboard cutout of John Wayne with his patch on his eye, and we've got costumes, so it looks kind of like Kim Darby, and they're showing the movies, and Cowtown will be open free on October 27th. That's a Sunday. And that's unusual for Cowtown to be open free.
And my birthday.
All right.
So it's a good day.
You be there, I'll bake a cake, and we'll go to Cowtown.
How old are you going to be?
29. I'm kidding.
Liar. Make you a coffin cake.
There you go. Well, I appreciate both of you coming in today. Jenny, I'm glad you were able to make it.
Thank you.
We didn't know if you were going to be able to or not, so glad to have you here. And Rita, always have fun visiting with you.
Oh, sure. And thanks.
We were hoping that hopefully this will become a staple with the conference where we can get somewhere at least set aside, whether it's in a room or out in somewhere, and visit with different people with different ideas.
That's
great. So you can either stay and join us and just talk, or if you're really wanting to get to a session, you're more than welcome to go ahead and head out. And it's up to you.
Well, I will take my dismissal and head to another session. Not because I don't want to stay. I would love to stay. I just promised one of my friends who's teaching a session that I would be there. Okay. So.
Very cool.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
It was fun.
Appreciate it.
Enjoy the conference.
See you later.
You guys, this guy just went by our door, and he had the big cart, you know, and he had one little plant on it.
It was a heavy plant.
Apparently. He looked pretty serious pushing it. Like, oh.
Well, I think I'm going to go ahead and have
you're
to.
You're going to go, too?
I'm so sorry. I feel like I was able to tell you our piece about what's happening with KLAEF, and we appreciate you doing this. Yeah. I think this is a great idea. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
Have fun.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you doing this for us. We appreciate what you do for the librarians
so
as well.
They pick up everything.
Well, Rita,
yeah, they're
you
pretty
enjoy
sensitive.
Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Who's this?
Who's this? I don't know. He's a stranger. Hey, Rob. we just have coming in, Rob Banks. He's our ALA representative for the Kansas Library Association. And we'll give him a moment to get situated and settled here.
Yep. Oh. If you want.
Oh, yeah. Now I can hear everybody.
Been enjoying the conference so far?
I have been.
It's been a good conference. How's it been for you guys?
It's been enjoyable.
I've good. Been to a lot of it, but
yeah, she, April came in late last night and slept in, and she came to our first session that we had. So
good.
One of the things we wanted to invite you here for, Rob, is to kind of let everybody know what's going on with ALA.
Okay.
Anything that's pertinent for Kansans or even nationally that would affect the librarians, and then basically membership. What membership can do if you want to go into some of that. But primarily it's really what is out there for the ALA and what they're doing for us.
Okay, well, great. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. A couple of things are very relevant to the conference right now, to the KLA conference, is the initiative this year that Barbara Stripling, the ALA president, has is the Declaration for the Right to Libraries. And we're pushing that nationally, and there are copies of the declaration here for people to sign. We're trying to get everybody to sign them. And, of course, librarians are obviously supporting libraries and want those to everybody to have a right to a library. One of the things that we're really trying to push is that people will have copies of the declaration at their libraries. So if there are organizations in town that you're connected with or that you go to, you can get them to sign it. It's possible to sign it online. So if you just don't happen to have a copy of it in your pocket, which a lot of us wouldn't necessarily, you can go on to ala.org. /declaration. There's a big hyperlink on the right hand side of the screen that gets you to copies that you can print off or a way to sign it online electronically. Talks about some ideas of how you can get public interest in your communities on that so that we can have people get really excited about supporting libraries everywhere. This is incredibly important right now, as we all know. Just because libraries, because of budget situations, are really struggling everywhere.
Ours have gone down the last few years as well.
So everybody's been facing it. You know, the economy has not been that great. And so certainly public libraries that are funded through taxes have taken a hit pretty strongly. Academic libraries, I mean, we're hearing about all kinds of issues on campus where tuition is being increased tremendously, and everybody's really struggling with that. And then, of course, one of the most critical issues that I think we're facing in the library world is the whole situation with school libraries and the really difficult position that school libraries and school librarians are in that the budget cuts are affecting them enormously, so they have huge problems there. But there's also a lot of people out there that are just not seeing that libraries in a school are a vital thing. Obviously, we all understand that and get it immediately, but getting that information through to members of the community is incredibly important, because we need help when librarians are being laid off and library positions are being cut, and there's schools that don't have librarians in them. Sometimes there's larger districts where there's one librarian to maybe service three high schools. You know, by the time you get into high school, you're writing papers and doing a lot of things, and it's incredibly important to have those librarians in there working with you and helping you. So it's a huge issue to have that removed. And of course, we all know there's all kinds of statistics out there showing the enormous value that students get from having a school librarian. That's a big issue we want
to address. An avenue for school librarians to, even if they're not associated with ALA, to kind of get support from them to kind of help them? Because it's too late for our community, because our two districts, they've about 10 years ago eliminated the librarians.
What?
And you just have paras for your librarians right now. You didn't know that, did you?
No. We have a high school librarian.
She's a para. She doesn't act. She's not actual a librarian.
Well, she doesn't do a very good job of being a para.
One other thing real quick. I wanted to interject real quick. Is you can also find them on Facebook.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Thank you. And that's really important, because a lot of us are on Facebook and use that. So thank you for reminding me of that. Certainly anybody can get to the ALA.org website and get to this for libraries, the Declaration for Right to Libraries there. There's also a number of tools available. that I wanted to mention, so thank you for asking that question. That led right to where I wanted to go next.
There
you go. You're psychic or something there. There are several things on the ALA website to help libraries of all different kinds, school libraries, public libraries, academic libraries. And there's even a toolkit for small rural libraries to help make your case to the city or whoever is your governing body. And all of those can be found on ala.org. And if you look under the advocacy tab, that's where you'll get to a lot of these. One of them is I Love Libraries. That's an enormous place for lots of activity and recommendations and toolkits available for people to use to help inform the public. Those are even, those are even geared towards just citizens in the community being able to use those. So there's a lot of really good things there. Then there's Advocacy University, which can give you a lot of training and hints, and I believe there's some even maybe little webinars and stuff on there that you can go to and get some assistance with that. One of the things that we have done a really great job of in Kansas, and I'm really proud we've been a leader in this area, is if you go to the KLA website, there's a Take Action for Libraries on the left-hand side. It's kind of a blue box. You just put in your zip code, and it gives you contact to the elected officials, especially federal officials, so your state representative and, and your senator, governor, obviously, of course, president, and those kinds of things. But it gives you access to all of those, and then it will also generally give you access to your elected officials that come here to Topeka for the Kansas legislature and ways to contact their offices. There will be, on current topics, there will be some talking points available for you there on those, so that if you feel passionately about something but you're not quite sure what to say, that gives you some ideas, so it kind of helps you organize your thoughts, so you're not, so that's a really good thing. And again, Kansas has been a real leader on that. We're one of the very early adopters of that in connection with ALA, and I use that all the time. As a member of ALA Council, and I'm also a member of the ALA Executive Board, it's part of my job to work with the elected officials on library issues, libraries of all kinds. And so I use that a lot. It gives you phone numbers to contact the office. It gives you email addresses. So it you can use it however you're comfortable, however it's easy for you to do, and it makes that contact really simple. Sometimes when you're contacting a Kansas legislature that comes here to Topeka, you know those people because they're from your community and you know them. Sometimes the folks that go to Washington may not be so from your local community, so you may not have that closer connection with them. So it may be a little more difficult. Well, this gives you a lot of tools to make that easier for you, because a lot of us are not necessarily the kind who are just going to grab somebody and start talking to them about stuff. So it helps set that up and makes that a lot easier for you to use.
Yeah, one of the federal contacts on here I thought was kind of good to have on there was President Barack Obama's.
Yes, so you can contact everybody and express your opinions on that. You mentioned that in your area, your districts had gone to paras, and unfortunately we have a lot of those throughout the state and throughout the nation. I don't personally want to give up that we can get librarians back in there someday.
Right.
We have to keep working on that. Obviously, that's not going to happen right away. It's going to be a long, hard battle, because right now everybody's looking for ways to save money every way they can. And, you know, we do too in our homes. So we understand that aspect. But training the kids, helping them learn libraries are such a crucial part of that. And again, I know I'm talking to people who firmly believe what I believe, but it's really an important thing. And I think ALA has done a really nice job of providing toolkits to let you start wherever you are and get a little more comfortable with those kind of contacts. One other thing on that, and then I can go to some other things, but every year we have National Legislative Day in Washington, D.C., and a group of us always go, and I'm also the state coordinator for that activity. Always love to have people go along. unfortunately, we have no funding, so right. you've got to be able to get yourself there and pay for the hotel and those kinds of things. But then we go around as a group and visit with all of our legislators and make points with them about the different library issues right. that are in front of them. It's a fun time. We always have a good time. I'll have to admit, the first year I went, I was pretty intimidated by all of that. Now I'm leading the group and doing a lot of the talking. But
you're the old hand now.
Yeah, but it's a great way to have that experience. It's really fun to be able to wander around the halls and see people that you know from television right. and whatnot. And it's a great experience. So if anybody's interested in that, I don't have the dates with me, but it's in early May, I believe, this okay. year. And I'll send out things on Ken Libel looking okay. for folks to go along. So I'd look forward to that.
On the state and national level, is it the congressmen or women receptacle, or is it kind of a mixed bag with our state in particular? Or I don't know what the flavor is. I know some are, yeah, but I didn't know about on the national level how...
On the national level, I would have to say this year when we went, knowing how things are in Washington right now, we did not necessarily anticipate an overly warm reception just because everybody's cutting money.
Right.
Yeah. I was pleasantly surprised. We had very good conversations in each office. We had a couple of the legislators pop their heads in and talk to us, which is not always common. You usually end up talking to staff, which is great.
Okay.
They're the ones who kind of put the talking points in front of the representative or senator anyway. So, okay. you know, it's not a bad contact by any means. That's usually your most effective contact. But it's always okay. nice to talk to the elected person right. as well. And they certainly listened. They didn't give us a lot of hope for current change or
right.
upcoming change, but we actually had very good conversations with them, and I think they listened very carefully. So
we're
I was
not
very
forgotten.
Pleased with that. We're not forgotten. I can't be very encouraging about any immediate change, but we at least
I think everybody understands that. Though,
yeah.
So
yeah. Unfortunately, that's kind of where we are. But it's I think we get listened to, and it's always a good thing to do.
Did you have a question, Chris?
Well, if you got 2.5 minutes, we can listen to the ALA president, Barbara. I guess there she's saying her declaration.
Yes, she's got a thing on the website talking about the declaration, and certainly if you want to listen to that, that's
if
great.
If you have the time, or if you want to go on for some talking points, and then we can put it in afterwards.
We can listen to that now, and then I can go on to a different subject.
Okay. We'll let Chris put it to it.
Hi, I'm Barbara Stripling, president of the American Library Association. The American Library Association is conducting an important public engagement effort this year to enable members of the public to affirm the value of school, public, academic, and special libraries in their lives. We've developed a declaration for the right to libraries, and we will be conducting a nationwide campaign over the next few months to hold signing celebrations in every type of library, where everyone served by the library, from young children to older adults, will have the opportunity to sign and affirm their right to a library. Libraries operated by qualified library professionals are the cornerstone of democracy, where individuals are empowered to develop literacy and inquiry skills that enable them to become lifelong learners. Libraries strengthen families and build communities. They promote research and scholarship and connect people around ideas. Libraries in schools, universities, and communities serve as the great equalizer, where everyone, no matter the age, background, language, or affiliation, has equitable access to the technology, latest resources, learning and collaborative spaces, instruction and guidance from qualified library professionals, and the tools and support they need to become creators, not just consumers of information. Librarians are trusted individuals, trusted by their communities to safeguard open access to information, to protect our right to know. Libraries strengthen our nation. Now is the time for all of us to stand up for our libraries, to let our voices be heard across the nation. Now is the time for all of us to declare our right to libraries.
Sounds good.
You can certainly tell Barbara's really passionate about this subject and is very excited about it. One favor I would ask of my colleagues in Kansas is if you get signing ceremonies going on in your communities, and I hope you all do, if you can let me know about how many signatures you get. They've kind of asked me to try to collect a rough number from Kansas as just a general count, and you can certainly send me an email about that with that number, and I will pull all those together and let them know. We'd love to have a fantastic number from Kansas, and I know a lot of people in the communities care. You know, you hear about that. You hear about the schools are so important to people. And so if and you get counts, why, just let me know.
And you stated they don't necessarily have to be ALA affiliated.
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. We want everybody.
So everybody join in.
Everybody join in. Okay. I want people signing it who don't even know what ALA is. You know, people in your community, that may not mean anything to them, right. And that's perfectly okay. The important thing is that the library is important to them and that they really feel passionately that everyone should have a right to access a library. That's what we were hoping to get that groundswell going.
Okay.
So that's an exciting thing. It kind of leads out of another thing I wanted to talk about is the initiative from Maureen Sullivan from last year, the ALA president, about transforming libraries. She got ALA hooked up with Rich Harwood from the Harwood Institute, and I was fortunate enough to be part of the ALA planning part of all of that exercise to get that set up and get communities working with the Harwood Institute plans of how to work with your community. And their whole concept is turning outward. Lots of times when we're looking at things, we look at them, so what's going to be easiest for us in the library, what's going to work the best for us, and the Harwood concept is what's best for the community. How does the library help the community, and what's wanted there? And by helping the community and finding out what they want and working with them, you automatically improve your library and make it more reliable and or more relevant to your community. And so that's an important thing that's still going on. I know that the Northeast Kansas Library System is going to be doing some work on this in the next few months, and I'm going to be working with them because I got in on the training. And I would be happy to work with any place else in Kansas that's interested in working on that.
Just you mentioned working with the community. April's here. Of course, everybody that's a regular listener, she's still in high school. As a teenager, what do you see your libraries and what do they need to offer you as to become part of that community and be welcome to teenagers? What would you like the library to do? What type of programs or what type of collections?
I just like the library.
Are we talking public or school?
Either or.
Okay.
Our public libraries, I don't go to our public library enough to, I'm so busy. But
and I'm her dad, that's sad.
But
what would it take to get you into the library more often?
I don't know.
Well, I know just one of the things.
Coffee, candy.
Coffee would get me.
People always seem to show up to more programs if there's cookies.
Yeah.
So,
I think sometimes when we make, for public libraries, if we make so many rules, it kind of deters, like there's so many rules. And I know why, like with our computers, you have to have a mouse pad to get on. And there's a certain time limit, you have to sign up, and there's just a lot of stuff. It just gives me a headache.
So it's the culture of you want everything pretty much pretty soon, if not at the moment.
On demand right now.
And I think with with our school library, which it's just a matter of getting books. Because we have the encyclopedias, we have the world books and everything, but we are... But the main thing students go there for is for just a book to read, because our English classes usually require one, and if we're just bored, we'd go. And we're very bad at keeping up to date on stuff, and I know it's hard when things coming out so fast and the budget, and I don't know.
Well, I know one of your favorite collections, which you review for the show, is music, and we had to drop that in our collection, but... So you're more interested in seeing more of the popular culture type stuff.
Yeah, because every library has books. It's a library, so. I don't know.
But not everybody may have the book that you want.
Exactly. Just keep up to date and just really advertise what you have. Because a lot of the times, like me, and I know other people are like this, I don't pay attention to when authors write a second book. Sometimes I don't even know there's a second book until like 2 years later, and I have to reread the first book. And so it's really hard for us to keep on track of what books are what's coming out. You know.
School librarians need to, and some are doing this, they need to be more proactive in saying what's coming out more often and spotlighting them.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have like a really old collection. I checked out this music book, and I opened it into like the middle of the book, and there's this dead fly squished in it, and it was like mummified.
You know, I've heard some weird bookmarks.
Yeah.
Fly's one of them.
Somebody was either really fast when they slammed that shut or something.
So there's some ideas from a team perspective, and the rules, I think we're trying to become a little bit more looser with the rules, but it is one of the hard things to overcome.
It is, and I think a lot of libraries are really working on that, but of course, as budgets are tighter, it's hard to get more computers, and so then you have to limit times and all those kinds of things. But my sense in talking to librarians, and I get this a lot in Kansas, is that people are really working on that and trying very hard to figure out ways to work around that kind of situation. And it's tough for everybody, you know. Right. We have to do with what we've got, and sometimes that's really hard, but I've heard about so many creative things going on in Kansas that actually help get around some of those issues. So that's an exciting part, and I think that's kind of a lot of the thought with the transforming libraries through Harwood stuff, is looking at the aspirations for the community and talking to them and really reaching out and asking the kinds of questions you asked, April, that, you know, what do you want? What do you need? What do you see the library doing for you? And we aren't going to get there if we don't ask those kind of questions.
I think it's kind of hard, though, because kids don't like to read now.
Yeah.
And so even if you...
But they like to listen and watch.
Yeah, but they go to...
Those are all things you can still do at the library.
Yes, but they don't necessarily go over to the movie, because I know in grade school is right across from our library, so kids will go over there, but they'll get on the computer. Mm-hmm. They don't go anywhere near the book section. And it's hard to try to ask a generation of non-readers as readers, what would you like to have see in our libraries? Because they don't know what to say. They don't like reading in general, and I don't know.
Well, that's where we need to know what you're interested in. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but the main goal for the library is to provide the experiences that are not available because of either financial, some type of other restriction or whatever. So that's why the movies started coming into the libraries.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think I've been fighting with my board trying to get video games, but they're just dead set against it. So
it'd be so cool. That would get kids to a library.
You have to understand the board's position. There's like four major consoles out there. Yeah. Game is like $60. So do you stick with one, or do you get a variety and just hope?
Yeah, and it's such a changing technology anyway. A lot of them are starting to want to move online only and not have the discs, and so that creates issues. And it's not, just stepping back from it, it's not an industry that's very library-friendly, not because they don't mean to be, but just the format just doesn't lend itself very well
like
to that.
I think it's like a month after something comes out, it's out of date.
Yeah.
Right. Because of how fast things are coming.
Yeah. It really
does. We took a tour of Topeka Shawnee County Public Library while we were here at KLA. And one of the things they're doing with console games is they buy They have the Xbox 360s mm-hmm. because it has Kinect, mm-hmm. and it's a little bit more interactive, similar to the Wii. Mm-hmm. But that means they get more variety of games for the one console. Mm-hmm. And then they have those all in their teen room, and then they have a schedule of what game is going to be in one of their, I think there was four consoles.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So kids would just come in on the day that their game is on. That way more people can play.
Yeah. I think there was a couple of things that we can take away from the keynote speaker this morning, too, of looking at that experience. And sometimes there's ways we can work with people in spite of, I guess, our budget limitations and maybe not having all of the formats and things that we would love to have. In an ideal world, we'd have all of those things. But I think sometimes if we can form relationships with the teens and have those discussions with them, it's kind of been easy in the past to say, you know, well, here's the book, everybody read it.
Right.
Not everybody wants to read it. And we've certainly got a generation that is very much individuals in a lot of ways. And so it's up to us to provide that best experience for them by trying to connect and find out what's going to work for each and every one of them. That's a lot of work. It's hard to do. But I think it's well worth it. And I think as we work within our communities, that's certainly going to be better in the long run. But it's not an easy thing. It takes a lot of effort.
With that, we're going to take a short break. We'd like to thank G&G for providing the transportation to bring our podcasting equipment with us. We'll be right back with Rob to continue this discussion in part two of this recording.
I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's only the moment that I don't wanna miss. And what I'm trying to say, well, I don't know, but I thought it was important just a minute ago. What I'm dying to say can't even be bought, cause I lost my ticket on the train of thought.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.